this play for me is a sort of a foundational text, this brain expanding observation of Stoppard's that every exit is an entrance somewhere else has unlocked so many theatrical ideas
indeed
for me. And I wanted to talk to you about how you sort of dusted off this 50-year-old script and made it theatrical and active and kind of a celebration, not just of dry British wit, but of theater itself. So go.
Wow. You got it, man. You got it. Absolutely.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 18th year, number 907, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. The Tony-winning Court Theater's production of Tom Stoppard's modern masterpiece, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, is Charles Newell's final production as artistic director, a role he's had for 30 years. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead closes this weekend, so I was thrilled to talk to Charlie about how his wonderful production came to be and his longtime relationship with not only Stoppard's plays, but the man himself.
I mean, I've done a lot of Stoppard here in Chicago, both at Court Theater and then did Rock and Roll at the Goodman. Over the years, he and I have developed a telephone relationship because he doesn't do emails and he doesn't often travel overseas because he needs to smoke. So I was looking at, you know, my transition and wondering, well, what might be a show that I could conclude my time as the artistic director of Court Theater? And of course, I went and looked at all of the Stoppard plays I hadn't done. And frankly, from early on, when I first was aware of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, I'd never actually seen a production. I'd never actually seen the movie before deciding to do it. But in reading it, unlike his other works, I just couldn't find the heart and the feeling and the emotion that is so important to me in making choices about what work do I commit my time and everyone else's time who's involved in the project, because it needs to move me in some emotional way, like we did somehow in The Heart Problem and certainly easily in The Invention of Love, et cetera, et cetera. Travesties is one of my favorite plays ever. Yep. And is certainly a journey about a man looking back over his life and where is he going now, or is... one of my favorite lines, and my kids who are now 30, but I took them to go see all of the Stoppard because they love the humor of it. The first line of that with the late, great Paxton Whitehead saying, "I'm dead then, good. And this must be the Stygian gloom one hears so much about." Anyway, so my wife was like, "Well, you should read Rosencrantz and Guildenstern." I was like, "Yeah, but I read it a long time ago and I didn't ever really connect to it." But I read it and it started to like just obsess me about how much the play is about identity, how much the play is about transitions and even both mortal death as well as small little deaths as one changes one's identity, who one is, and goes on to the next chapter in your life. And I thought, we could also do it in the most joyous way possible, coming off of Gospel Colonus, which of course was a life project for me in celebrating the redemptive atonement and release into one's most divine self. And I thought, well, there's something there. I don't know what it is, but let's just do it. And as you saw, Austin, we combine the tragedians, who are normally a cast of actors under themselves, with the Shakespeare characters. And it became as much of a celebration of legacy of Tom Stoppard, given that it was his origin play. And frankly, it was really mostly coming out of he gave us permission to do an online reading of Leopoldstadt during the pandemic years time, and together with an incredible group of scholars from the university, and then a full reading of the play. It was the most popular thing that during those times when people were only doing virtual stuff that Court Theater has ever done. And it is, to my reading, the most autobiographical, even though one could say the real thing might be in content, but in terms of that character of Leo that one meets late, sort of the 11th hour in Leopoldstadt. And I started to think, well, you know, he's the Hermione Lee biography has been incredibly valuable in this whole process.
And not just as a doorstop.
Exactly. I started thinking about, well, if Leopoldstadt, which is his most recent play, I hope not his last play, felt so emotional and revealing and vulnerable in the character of Leo, who, of course, has a multiple different names as well as Thomas Strausler, Tom Stoppard. And I thought, well, what if we look at A Rosencrantz and Guildenstern and actually embedded in it, perhaps there is a lot of autobiographical thinking that either he intended or just is the first piece of writing as a playwright. And so naturally it would come out of his own personal experience. So this is a long-winded answer, Austin. I hope it's not too long, but basically there were so many reasons. And the fact that we've extended the run, we're packing the houses, we have an incredible cast who, during the course of the rehearsal, there was a number of family funerals for some of our actors. And so we lost time that was so precious in rehearsal in honoring actors to be with their families for their funeral. And yet the actors still just lean forward into this and arrived at the end of the piece in the most joyous way. I go see it almost every night, which is rare for me. And it's just such an affirmation of the transformative power of theater and us all becoming our most divine, perfect selves as we transition in all kinds of ways. So there you go.
Charlie, you're the perfect podcast guest. I say go and you don't stop. It's perfect.
Okay, good. All right, there you go.
And it's funny, joyful is never an adjective I would have ascribed to Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Yeah.
But you're right, the search, not Nate Berger and Eric Hellman as Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and Nate particularly finds this energy, this boyish, childish, almost puppyish energy of trying. I mean, it's a play about searching for what you don't know and then accepting what the impossibility of knowing. Mm-hmm. And I realized as you were talking that Stoppard has been fundamental to me because I was in a summer stock production. I'm playing Claudius. I directed a scene from this to get me into my MFA directing programs. I directed Travesties on Paper.
Wow.
I love that you have a phone conversation with Stoppard. Is that how you were able to convince him to take this massive play and, dare I say, reduce it?
Well, actually, our phone relationship was really established and built around when I did Rock and Roll at the Goodman Theater, because he let me know when he gave us when I was hired by the Goodman, the Goodman got the rights, that he wanted to connect with me. We had connected via email, and the way that he reads email is his spouse prints those out and he reads them, right, on a piece of paper. So, but he reached out to me and he said, you know, I wasn't happy with some of the last 15, 20 minutes of the New York production's text. Would you be open to us talking about your experience in previews, because I would like to make some changes? And of course, I was like, God, that sounds fantastic. That's where our phone relationship began. And then looking at the Samuel French version of this, of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, there's an author's note at the beginning that is unique in my experience of however many hundreds, thousands of plays I've read, in which he acknowledges that there are brackets contained in that public version that he's offering to the directors of that play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, to use the cuts if they so wish for the story they want to tell. Some are, in fact, like there's one that's like 6 or 7 pages long.
Wow.
And so I thought, well, thank you, Tom, because I would like to really distill it to its essence in a way. Frankly, it was also because I wanted the cast to be smaller than usual for financial and artistic reasons. Yep. And so with that kind of permission, and we also eliminated all of the, there's 2 intermissions written into the play, and we chose to not have intermissions. So that's alone is a half an hour of running time that usually isn't there.
Right.
And so all of that was in the spirit of what his note was. And I do believe it was in the Hermione Lee biography where he acknowledged one of his favorite productions of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, I think was in Brazil or some country in South America, that was played by 6 actors and hand puppets. And I thought, okay, so there's lots of different ways of doing this play. And he actually really liked that production. So I don't expect that he'll be coming to see the show because he doesn't travel that much anymore. But I'm very proud of having the legacy, having the history that I've had with him over the years. And here's something that I know that the Court Theater board was like, really, Charlie? I was like, well, what if I actually direct this play differently than I would normally, carrying the mantle and responsibility and accountability as an artistic director? What would it be like to direct the production of Stoppard's play, and this play particularly, and in this moment of my own transition particularly, and a celebration of what Court Theater has been, if I basically think of it as I'm a freelance director working at Court Theater? Mm. And so the kind of joy that audiences are feeling, the idea that it's we can go back to the theater and have the joy and the very profoundly moving sense and profound contemplation about what is the meaning of death and how do we all think about it, just was such a joyous experience for me. I couldn't imagine a better show to be my last as artistic director, even though I'm doing Berlin, a stage adaptation by Mikkel Maher of the Jason Lutz graphic novel next season, as well as perhaps another production that we're still planning.
Well, and let the records show that you put air quotes around last.
Right, right, exactly.
Hey, hello. I'm Adrian Scarborough from TV's Gavin and Stacey, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Lucky you.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2024, we'll be performing the special election edition of The Complete History of America, Abridged, in Illinois, Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Colorado. We hope to have specific venues and dates up on our website very soon. And now back to my conversation with Charles Newell, the outgoing artistic director of Chicago's Tony-winning Court Theater. Hearing him talk about his production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead made me realize something that I think we've all discovered, artists and audiences alike. Joy is important. Joy, capital J, is important. Not theater is capital I important.
Yeah. Amen.
I think we're all responding to that. And that answers, I think, what was going to be my next and final question is, why did you decide to make it so show busy and theatrical and wonderful?
Well, I've learned that in my preparation for a production, and particularly something like Shakespeare or Tom Stoppard, having done many of his plays, having done a production of Hamlet with the late, great Guy Atkins, which was also an incredible experience for me, much less, I think I've done all but 7 of the Shakespeare canon productions in some way, assistant or directed or otherwise. And I thought, you know, Charlie, you have got all of this history and all of this background and knowledge. And then I read the Hermione Lee biography, et cetera, and all the preparation, and particularly his article on turning out to be Jewish, which I highly recommend to your listeners.
Right.
It's hard to find, but it's an incredible piece of writing. Anyways, my point is, rather than do a preparation and I come into rehearsal ready to share everything that I've been learning and studying, I intentionally show up and literally try to forget everything I know and rather just operate out of a place of instinct, because there's so much history already there that the more energy I put in to try to remember something as opposed to just respond in the moment. Yeah. And so it was quite delightful to see the production in early previews to go, oh, that's where I'm at right now. And this company is the most generous, joyous. I mean, just during the rehearsal break, there was just laughter all the time in the rehearsal room. And I thought, well, this is where we're going to go. And this is where they're going to lead me and an audience in this place of celebration of theater. So it wasn't like, oh, let's go in and make a joyous production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. It happened, or to quote from Falstaff, out of instinct.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I guess that's what happens also when you cast a murderer's row of incredibly talented, exactly. funny, celebratory actors.
And then it turns out they can all really sing really well. So let's have them sing.
So let's have them sing. That, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because what was that impulse? Was it basically hearing them sing in rehearsal and going, wait, maybe that's how we end the play with a Bob Dylan song?
Well, yes, although in that curtain call of the Bob with the Bob Dylan song, I learned again through Hermione Lee something I had read earlier and actually had forgotten. It is a common practice. I don't know if every play, but Tom Stoppard acknowledges that he listens to a piece or a couple pieces of music on repeat while he's writing a play. And so, like a Rolling Stone is one of them. There's another Dylan song that he also acknowledges playing on repeat. We did not incorporate that. The other thing, though, to say is that there's a leitmotif of music throughout the piece, which is based on one of, frankly, more Easter eggs in this production than I even realized I was planting, much less the production is, which is the Fauré Requiem, specifically the Paradisium section, because for me, it's the most joyous piece of music that is a requiem.
Right.
So there's this combination of joy and transition and death. And that backs me up into my experience of directing Oedipus Rex, in which Jennifer Glass, a brilliant actress in that production, when I was looking for sound and music to tie into the story, and it was all, frankly, out of a place of grief and mourning and sadness, she said, you know, but Charlie, in my Pentecostal religious spiritual practice, yeah, we mourn and grieve, but we also celebrate the joy of a death. Yeah. And that's a way of release. And so the Fauré Requiem, I think this is the fourth or fifth production I've used that piece of music over my 30 years at Court Theater in all kinds of different ways that some audiences may notice and some may not, but that's okay. It's just still there.
I love the idea that joyful requiem is not quite the oxymoron that it sounds like.
Exactly.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. The Court Theater's production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead closes this Sunday, April 28th, 2024. Go to courttheater.org for more information. Then send us your joyful existential crisis via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to court jester Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Charlie Bruin. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Adrian Scarborough, who I first met when he was playing Rosencrantz in Tom Stoppard's play opposite Simon Russell Beale as Guildenstern, and who in 2020 won the Olivier Award for his role as Herman in Tom Stoppard's Leopoldstadt in London, And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 907 2721sts of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Charlie, congratulations on your production, your tenure. Thank you for this production, because it was a joyful evening in the theater. Amazing.
Cool. Thank you, Austin. Thank you for the time to be able to talk about it. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.